Station number 12661, Mr. Jim Ray, reel 27.
Mr. Ray, reel 27, we're talking about your time in the early period, moving forward, and conditions in the bamboo jungle.
Yes.
What about what you might call generically creepy crawlies, you know, snakes, things like that that go, people don't like much?
Well, people talk about things like that as though they're coming out all the time and watching crawling. As a matter of fact, I don't think I saw more than a couple of snakes all the time I was in Burma. But ants, ants and things like that, and monkeys, and wildlife, and snakes. I don't know. Of course, I wouldn't deny that these creepy crawly things, because there are various parts of Burma where there are such things, you know, when you get further down on the plains. But it didn't bother me.
Would the idea of them creeping up on you in the night when you're asleep, things, did the insects bother you during the night, or did you get bitten by things?
Mainly mosquitoes or ants. If there's any ants around, it'd be a nuisance. Other than that, well...
Didn't bother you?
No.
Did it bother anybody?
Well, if it did, there's no complaints. But I'm sure if I was bothered by mosquitoes and ants, the other lads were as well. But we didn't care.
Did you have malaria precautions then with mosquitoes? Quinine or whatever?
Well, we didn't have any quinine tablets, unfortunately. Might have had, the medical officer might have had quinine, he would have had a supply of quinine tablets.
But you weren't given a sort of regular issue of them?
No. Because to the layman, how am I, or how is an African going to realise he's got malaria? What are the symptoms? You see, they don't know. They might think they've got a cold until it gets on them proper and starts shivering. So the MO, he can't give you these tablets until he's diagnosed what the hell is wrong with you for a start. And if you're ill, you go straight to the RAP, Regimental Aid Post, and he makes the diagnosis and he takes a sample. Your blood.
Well, during the early period, did you have any problems with your health? You know.
The only thing I had, I think, I had a septic all the time, and that was, for that part. And I went down to the RAP, took my sock off, and they examined it. It was more or less in the wick on chafing. You know, it was like festered a bit. He gave me some antibiotics, and about 2 days it was cleared. That job finished.
Now, in the jungle, how many of your battalion would be round you? I mean, would you be really a...
Close.
Everyone would be round?
Oh, yes.
The whole battalion moved together?
We moved together, company by company. And we formed what they called a box. That was two companies in front, two at the side, one reserve, HQ in the middle. And all around was protected. And I tell you what we used to do, Peter, if there's any high ground or low ground, we used to make panges. Panges? They're bamboo, slivers of bamboo, about 18 inches long, and there's a sharp point on one end to a needle point, and it's just cook it over the fire. Young bamboo, you know, it's strong, over the fire, so I've got a needle point to scrape it like a needle point. The end was roughly rounded so I could shove them in the floor at an angle of 35 degrees. Now, each of us is to carry a bundle of about 40 in a very light bamboo, you can carry them wrapped up. And if you're in a static position, we've got what they call panji fields. Start outside the area and stick them in at an angle of 35 degrees right round. And it's just like, it's better than barbed wire, because Japanese, they had soft-soled shoes on, you know, with split toe. And you believe me, if they get one in the foot, that's it. At an angle of 35 degrees, or if they made an attack and they got so close together, as good as bamboo, good as barbed wire, they get it well in front, so if they were started coming in quick, it would hinder them, you know what I mean? Getting one of these skewers, and then that was it. You could open fire, small arms, automatics. Before they got on top of you, anyway. Then afterwards, when we were ready to proceed again, collect all our panjis, bundle them up, put them on the back. See, this is our self-protection.
Right, so that's how the battalion would move.
Yes.
So what's the next phase? You're moving forward, not, you know, as we said, not really meeting the Japanese, which a bit over to the left, you know, of trouble starting, you know. What's the next thing you remember?
Well, proceeding down by, keeping the Caledon close to us, you see.
The river?
The river Caledon, yes. That was a tidal river, Peter. Because certain times of the day it was flowing one way and then flowing the other way. Because the Caledon, it ran into the port of Akyab. That's where it eventually ended, in there, poured into the Indian Ocean. It was navigable, I should think, for about 20 or 30 miles from Akyab inland. After that, it got shallow. We kept the Caledon on one side, and then we had to cross on the other side. Naturally, we had to swim across, make bamboo rafts for those that couldn't swim. We also had to take a telephone line across, and the river would be about half a mile wide. And myself and Colonel Sergeant Hope, we took the telephone line across first, plus four or five Africans to establish a point on the further bank. And particular point of operation, signal officer, the drum of cable. It was on a big drum. So I said to the signal officer, I said, you know, sir, I said, this is going to be a pretty tricky job. He said, why? He said, it's quite simple. Just get the line and take it across. I said, do you realise the farther you go across with this line, the heavier it's going to be? Oh, no, nonsense. I said, what about the drag? It gets heavier as you go out. I should think that's a simple operation. Oh. Me and Arthur, we went across. I made a toggle. A piece of bamboo in my hand. And pulled it across. Arthur, he had a loop. And he put it around his wrist. The worst, I didn't know. The worst thing he could have done. Well, it was about 4 or 5 yards in between Arthur and myself. We were going across, pulling it, and pulling it, and it got harder and harder, the drag, because it was coming down in a loop like that, and it was going, the gravitation and the length from one side to the other, then pulling it off the drum. Arthur got into difficulties, and I went down, he's treading water like, and I dived down, hurled the slack up. I said, can you get it off your wrist? And it pulled tight, and I had to let go again, I had to go to him, and I had to get the toggle, keep that loop, and I had to get support Arthur at the time. And we were about three quarters of the way across, and one of the rafts with about four Africans on, it started to go adrift. And so I thought, well, can you manage Arthur? I said, right, carry on. Anyway, we got to the other side, utterly exhausted with that. Pulled in sufficient slack, went to the nearest tree, pulled it round, and I had to get that loop, and his hand was blue, stopped the circulation. Take it off, wrap it round the tree quick, put about two or three arm bends in so it couldn't pull back, and I had to go down, run down the river bank. This raft was away with these four blokes on, and dive in, swim after the raft, get onto it, and side it over my shoulder to the other bank. It was going straight to where it's a good job it was, because the Japs weren't very far away from that point. Anyway, we got the Africans landed, pulled the bamboo raft up, because they're very light, out the water, and went back to see how Arthur was. His hand was swollen with the circulation, you know, all his fingers were just like pork sausages. So the rest of my company got across by the same methods as I did, but some of the lads that were fairly good swimmers, and the rafts, we ferried that our equipment across, the ammunition and that sort of thing, ferried that across by rafts.
Was it a deep river?
Where we were, I couldn't see the bottom, and I went down as far as I could for the slack, and I was treading water, and the weight of my own body, like, you know, when you want to get up to the surface and make a pull that way.
Was there any risks entailed in swimming in that sort of water?
No.
No
crocodiles, not like that.
Or leeches or anything like that?
Leeches around the edges of the water edge. And further down in the vegetation, because I had a couple on me and my legs.
Was there a nuisance? I mean,
you can't feel them until you notice them when they get bloated up. And then you get a cigarette or a piece of a stick, touch them, and they drop off. And then salt. Rub with salt in where it suckers on, you know, pull blood through the vein. Die.
So what happened after you crossed the river?
As soon as we went,
you still hadn't come in yourself into direct contact with the Japanese.
No, not at that time. When the company eventually got across, the first thing we did, we made a good defensive position on that side, while the rest of the battalion came across. But I think some of them would do the same as I did, further up the river, you see, but they were out of sight, the tail end. Anyway, we managed to all get across. There's no casualties. We got all our equipment and everything across by rafts. What we did with the rafts, we disintegrated them and scattered them in the jungle. Scattered it all around. Because to leave a raft, and the Japs seeing rafts, they know that there's troop movement there. we what they call obliterated our tracks.
So you had to carry everything on your backs? Well, well we not your back, but the troops, the unit had to carry everything, did it?
Well, the unit itself, we used to have what they call carriers. African carriers. They used to carry headloads.
And how many of them would they have?
Oh.
A company, say.
Aye, about a company. I mean, they're all in BHQ. Some of them were attached to the quartermaster for the airdrops, you see. So
to carry be a fair number of them.
Oh, yes. And we had a Tinga Farafara, I mentioned him in the privacy. He came out with us, you know, to Burma. And he's quite a young man, and he used to be a head bearer, and he used to have a rifle over his shoulder.
Now, he was your servant, wasn't he? He was the third of your servants.
Yeah, Tinga.
That's right.
Mm. He could shoot. He was taught how to use a rifle.
But most of them, they weren't trained soldiers, though.
They were all trained. But they would, actually, their job was to carry headloads. Because there's no transport in the jungle. None whatsoever.
And what would they carry?
They would carry ammunition. Yes. They would carry food supplies.
Between drops.
Yeah. And what was left, any reserve, feed, they carry all that. And you used to have a stick and would help them. But they were well protected anyway. They could carry the headloads and they knew they were with us. Coming up to the forward lines, you know, and it was all right behind them.
So you got across the river, you destroyed your rafts,
yep.
Distributed them in the, you know,
yeah, right, yes.
What happened next then?
And dug in as a battalion, and then...
How deep would you be able to dig in lowland like that without, or would you get water, or would you go up to the hills?
We went up on the hillsides where there was no water at all. Then dig in, make a pit, you know, facing forward.
And how deep would you go?
Well, scratch a hole as long as you got length to cover your body. You know, either you slept in it and fought in it. That's what I did.
So no more than 3 foot deep?
Right. Yeah, about 2 foot six. If that, because it was, as I said, it was a hell of a job digging with a matchet.
With the roots,
yeah.
So then what?
Well, that was my fighting position until the next lift up. But in the meantime, the Japanese were coming on the opposite side of the river, the opposite side that we had evacuated. But still, there was troops on that side. Our battalion had to occupy the other side, you see. And we got to know from the intelligence that the Japanese were using a boat for ferrying a small boat for supplies, and it had an outboard engine on. So we, myself and myself and a sergeant, an officer, we took some men down. Right, took a Bren gun down. They had rifles, and they had a car headlamp and a battery, as to shine on the river at night time, because you also used to do the boating at night time. You see. Well, we were there. In position, I could hear the pop, 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 and I went over to Jammy and Jamison. Yeah, so I know, Jammy, I said, it's coming down. Are you ready with the light? I said, as soon as you put your light on, I said, we'll open fire. As soon as you get a target. The boat, you could hear converging nearer and nearer, and the sound echoes different. On the level of the water, you know, in the darkness, you see, and the open space. So I thought, where's the light? You know? Did your light didn't come on? So I said, well, I'm going to have a wild crack at this. And we put the brain, got the brain going, said, right, come on. And I had an idea of the direction, and I fired about four or five bursts. And we had incendiary bullets, you see, as well, to tell where the target was. Whether it hit the target or not, there was a hell of a row from that boat, and they started pooping, and it was going up in the air, like, you know, and it quietened off. And it come, dawn was breaking. So I said, well, to myself, what a bloody washout. And I said, what about the light? I was expecting that bloody headlight going on that to give us a target. Nobody said no, like. I thought to myself, aye, when you put a lead light on, you are a target at this side. Now, I don't know if it was possible of putting that light on or not, but what would have happened to me, they must have thought the same as me. If I put that bloody light on, I'm attracting their fire. So I was that disgusted, Pete. The other men there, that was that, over. I said, right, come on. But the man just walked away and left it. Left Jamison and his officer. Jamison winked and smiled at me, like, you know, and I thought, aye. We were the first ones wanted to put a few shots across, and that was all bloody quiet where that where the headlight was. I went back and we consolidated ourselves on that side of the river.
That was your first clash with the Japanese. How do you know what damage you'd done at all?
No.
No light.
No, the motorboat, we could hear the shouting over where we were firing at. We could hear the shouting. So they must have just got disturbed anyway, that the motor cut out straight away on the boat. The boat was took out the river and dragged amongst the undergrowth, you see, on the other side.
So it had been a failure, really?
Well, it was. Yeah, but that was the first incident there. And I went back into the company. Major McFadgen, he was at my company commander at the time. I had a bit chat to Mark like, and he said, oh, well, Jim, no mind. He said, we'll have another go at them. And our company from there, we...
Did that make you worried? I mean, that was the first time you'd been in action with Africa.
No, it didn't worry me.
You had been let down.
Oh, it didn't worry me unduly, because situations are as it occurs. You don't pass much a comment. It's only my personal comment there, you see, Peter.
Now, you were using a Bren gun. We hadn't mentioned this before. They were equipped with Brens, were they?
We were, aye.
How many?
Well, we had two platoon. I got on one anyway. I got down. I said, I'm going to have a crack at this. This took my street.
So they'd been trained in the Bren?
Yeah, aye. The Africans could have fired it if they wanted to, but I just got down, and the African did the number two to me.
Were all of them trained in that, or just selected ones?
Oh, yes. Yes, they're all trained. Anyway, Pete, we went farther up the river, and there's a bit of a clearing, and our company, we established ourselves there, and then the rest of the battalion came up.
So you're moving up the Caledon River now, on the other side,
on the other side, that's it. And we went... Yes, and we went up some high ground on close to the riverside, and on like a ridge in front, like a ridge. And as soon as we got to the top of the ridge, on our side, the Japanese was on a ridge on in front of us. It's a small little one. Anyway.
So there's a valley between you?
Like a little valley between. Not very far. just in good range anyway for my guns. Now the Japs on that part of that ridge, they had a small field gun that could be operated by four men pulling it. Anyway, we got down. The Japs opened up first. We flattened down, and we started, and we could see them. We could see the Japs.
They weren't dug in then.
They weren't quite dug in. And I tell you what, we weren't dug in either, but we had a good ridge.
So it was a bit of an encounter, but they'd come up the top of their ridge.
They were there before us. So they were on this ridge and down coming onto the level part.
So they were moving forward. Yeah. About how many roughly?
Well, it must have been a company of Japs, or maybe more.
So they may have had positions on top of the hill, but they were moving out of them.
Down towards us anyway. They opened fire first. We got down to it, spotted where they got a good spot, and started getting onto the target, and we were doing well.
Was this open ground then? It's a bit of a clearing.
Open ground, yes. And there's and in some parts there was like foliage. Then you could see the Japanese who shook them up, and they were trying to get away. My company commander was on the left, so he went over and said, "Give me fire and cover, Jim." He says, "And I'm going down." He says, "And I'm going across." And I said, "Right." I said, "When I've done that, sir," I said, "I'll come up to you." "Right, okay, fair enough." And he went down with ship building men. I had a gun, three men. And as he went down, I kept up the gunfire all the time while he was going down, you see.
What was the Japanese fire like, the Africans' fire like?
Spasmodic. I know that it's trying to be pretty athletic, because when I was firing with my brain gun, I had some bushes on this side, and the bushes were flipping like that, because I knew this. I was in range.
So the Japanese fire was spasmodic. How about your troops? Were they firing well and accurately?
Yes. They got down and doing the job, firing.
Controlled fire, yes.
Oh, yes.
Providing covering fire.
Oh, yes. So after I'd done my covering fire, and I followed, went down, and I went to my company commander, and we're going along. I had a brain gun in my arm like this. And there's a bloody voice on our left, and it was Captain Cave. "And the thing you do, Peter, don't shout, don't talk, don't even bloody whisper. Signal. A company, where are you? Are you there? You know, A company." We were on top of them. All he could do was just look left. There's a connecting fire. And suddenly, there's whipping, bang, bar up. And Lieutenant Brown, he got his arm blown off. He was using that little gun. And
so Cave had given away your position.
By shouting. And I looked at Major, I said, God, bloody hell, fire, isn't that? He said, shook his head. And then after that, 2 seconds, bam, 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 bam. This little gun opened up. It was his company, very close. Bang, it was sharp. And we got down to it, and all that side, they opened up. But they got that gun away. They left quite a number of Japanese dead. And, you know, we must have blasted them, because there's blood all over the bamboo, shattered all over the bamboo. We got away.
So they left before
Yeah, we were on the tail, and if it hadn't been for that, that gun firing, we'd have been at them. We'd have got that gun.
So that gun caused a delay by firing?
Yes, that was the casualty that happened.
Did you suffer many casualties then, yourselves?
No, we were all right. I think there's two or three in B and C company. They got minor shot wounds, wounds. Except for Lieutenant Brown losing part of his arm. That was the worst.
How would it be? I mean, when you're in the jungle like that, how would you be evacuated?
Well, carried as far as possible and treated as long as possible until we get an airlift to take the casualties out by air.
Okay.